It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Books, films, television shows, magazines, podcasts. You'll find stories in the true crime genre across all of these platforms. But what happens when we focus on men who perpetrate violence against women, as is the case in most of these true crime stories? True crime stories mostly focus on white male killers who prey on young, white, conventionally attractive women, even though statistics show that 80% of murder victims are men. We'll hear from the author of The Hot One, a memoir of friendship, sex, and murder, which is about her best friend's killing. Do you think it's problematic when true crime focuses on violence against women and the psychology of male killers? How should we tell these stories? Should we focus on the perspectives of victims, law enforcement, survivors? Or do you think it's important to understand the perspective of the murderers? Are you a fan of true crime, or do you avoid it? Why? We want to hear from you. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Carolyn Murnick is a senior editor at New York Magazine. Carolyn, good morning and welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So true crime seems to be having a moment right now. There are so many shows and podcasts about murders and serial killers to choose from. Why is that, do you think?
That's a great question. I think these stories have always been around. We've always sort of been titillated by violence and mystery. But I think what's happening now is the confluence of sort of the rise of streaming television, where there's just so much content everywhere, so many new networks that, you know, every single platform is hungry for more programming. And this is kind of the lowest common denominator type stuff to keep churning out.
I think you kind of alluded to us, but is this obsession really new, or haven't we always been drawn to these kinds of stories?
Yeah, I think we have always been drawn to these stories. I mean, you know, the going back to perhaps Jack the Ripper was, you know, before we had streaming TV, we had tales like that and Son of Sam in the 70s. There's always been these figures that have kind of captured popular consciousness. However, what we're having now is just a kind of total blanketing of these stories from all places. As like you said, we now have podcasts, and we now have, you know, Facebook streaming TV, and we have premium cable, and we have, you know, our network television. So it's everywhere.
I guess I just remember as growing up, if you went to the drugstore or any place where they had magazines, there was a whole section of true crime. I can't remember all the titles, but the one that jumps out is True Detective, and they all had the most lurid covers, and almost all of them featured women in peril. And so now we're this is all just on video. I guess that it's what sells. The majority of these shows feature male perpetrators and their female victims, like Serial Season 1, the Ted Bundy tapes, and Making a Murderer. But in reality, the statistics show a completely different picture of who's getting killed out there. Aren't almost all homicide victims men?
That's true. Overall, in homicide rates, men are much more likely to be the victim of murder. However, women are more likely for their cause of death to be the victim of murder from a domestic partner. So they make up the higher degree of murders by, you know, a husband or a boyfriend. And often it's those stories that are the ones that are highlighted on a lot of these shows.
And why we choose to focus on female victims, specifically white female victims, even though they're in the minority? Why is that?
Right. I mean, you know, I would say that I think that has to do with whose perspective are we seeing these shows from? And it's often white male creators and white male editors and directors and showrunners that are, you know, coming up with the stories that they are attracted to, and also showing us the story through the perspective of the men on the show rather than the women. So often, you know, if it's not inside the mind of the killer, we're often sort of following this, you know, this enterprising male detective, or, you know, the male lawyer that won't give up. And it's the women are almost an afterthought.
We see them in the first few frames to establish that there's a dead body someplace, and then after that we kind of forget about him because the focus is elsewhere. That seems to be the formula. Carolyn Murnick is a senior editor at New York Magazine. You can join our discussion at any time at 800-642-1234. Carolyn, what other problems do you see with true crime and the way this genre chooses to tell these stories?
Well, I think a big one is, like you said, the focus on white, young, attractive female victims, which, you know, there's an opportunity cost to telling those stories. Obviously, their stories are worthy of being told. But when we're focusing on those stories over and over again, we're not getting the chance to hear about other victims of color or from minority or marginalized groups that are just as important and, you know, are suffering the same fate at the same time. But yet media is not paying attention to them. And unfortunately, a lot of the times police are not paying as much attention to them.
Let's take a call. Mark is with us from Bloomer. Mark, good morning. Thanks for being on the morning show today.
Hey, good morning. I don't understand why anybody would want to watch that stuff anyhow. This world is full of beautiful, wonderful, great, and amazing things. And to sit around and watch somebody else's misery and sorrow, and what purpose does it serve? How does that inherently improve our world in any way at all? That's what I want to know.
Mark, thanks for that call. So what is the attraction? Why do we watch this stuff?
Right. Well, you know, what I think is, in its essence, crime is always going to fascinate us because it's connected to so many big themes that are important to all of us, which is, you know, trauma and loss and death and how, you know, can we really ever know another person or are we safe? And these are big concepts that are a part of all of our lives. The problem I see, unfortunately, is that so much crime coverage does not get at these big ideas. It just sort of glosses over the surface and continues to do the same thing over and over again without telling a larger story.
Let's talk about some specific true crime shows. We'll start with the Netflix series Inside the Criminal Mind. The show's opening credits have men stalking through the woods, struggling to overpower their female victims, blood splatters from crime scenes, and then close-ups of dead female victims. Let's hear some of that.
What makes a serial killer? What drives them towards sadistic murder?
There are many, many reasons why a person can end up being evil.
What are the roots of their cold-blooded brutality?
Wow, movie
yeah.
Trailer voice, could it be more lurid? This is pretty typical of the language and imagery of true crime, and how is this problematic?
I mean, absolutely. I think we both felt, you know, that music comes on. It's like, oh, ominous. And, you know, but I think that we all know what to expect. I think why it's problematic is because it sort of numbs us, because we know we've seen it before. It's another story of a dead girl. And, you know, let's spend a few minutes trying to get inside the mind of this male killer. And that's really elevating the violence from my perspective. And that's exalting this misogynistic person rather than taking the chance to tell a new story.
We're talking with Carolyn Murnick about the true crime genre and why it's so problematic. She's a senior writer at New York Magazine and author of The Hot One, a memoir of friendship, sex, and murder. We want to know what you think about all of this, and you can join our conversation with Carolyn Murnick at 800-642-1234. Let's take another caller. Mike is joining us from Franklin. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Hey, so I am from Wisconsin, from Franklin, criminal justice major. One of the past callers mentioned just kind of why someone would be interested in dealing with someone else's sorrows. And I definitely have some compassion toward the victim, but just coming from my degree, it's more or less just an interest of what happened and why, and what can we do further? A lot of things like the Miranda rights, bad things happen and then we can correct them. So your Miranda rights, that was a actual rapist that we let go. Due to unfortunate circumstances and the law got changed. So sometimes when you uncover certain murders or crimes, you're exposing the truth. However, you're making it available for changes in the law and exposing it to the public.
All right, Mike, thanks for sharing that. What about that? I mean, Mike's interest in this is making sure that we always catch the bad guy. I'm probably oversimplifying that. But is it possible for true crime shows to be done right, as you might see it?
You know, I think so. And in fact, the point that your caller was making is that, you know, there's larger ideas here that are at play when, you know, that are tangled up in crime. And I would like, to me, the most successful shows that deal with crime are ones that get at these bigger ideas. For example, a show that I was very impressed with on Netflix from a couple of years ago was this limited series called The Keepers, which uncovered the rash of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church in Baltimore, and it followed the disappearance and murder of a nun who was a teacher at this Catholic school, and it went through the perspective of her former students who have been spending decades trying to get to the bottom of what happened to Sister Kathy. And the show did an excellent job of using the story of Sister Kathy's murder to explore these bigger issues of the tradition of brushing things under the rug in the Catholic Church and how loss can really live with friends of the victim for their entire lives.
Our conversation with Carolyn Murnick continues. She's a senior writer at New York Magazine and author of The Hot One, a memoir of friendship, sex, and murder. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about true crime and the problems with this particular genre of entertainment with Carolyn Murnick, senior writer at New York Magazine. Do you think it's problematic that true crime focuses on violence against women and the psychology of male killers? How should we tell these stories? What should we focus on? Maybe you're a fan of true crime, or maybe you avoid it. Why not? We want to hear from you. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Carolyn, let's talk about another show, the Ted Bundy tapes, which is also from Netflix. The show has interviews with Ted Bundy from when he was on death row, and it gives him the chance to tell the story in his own words. What are your thoughts about this show and how it portrays this story of a man who killed at least 30 women?
Right. Well, first I want to say I did not watch the show because immediately the premise of it just completely turned me off. To me, it seemed like, okay, we have another pedestal to put a male killer upon. And, you know, years, decades after his murders, we're going to keep bringing this guy up and looking at him as if he should be the point of interest here. And I'm so bored of that. However, you know, that show it was very popular, but there was a little bit of pushback around it online, which to me felt somewhat promising. In fact, Netflix, you know, there was so much activity on Twitter with people saying, I never knew Ted Bundy was so hot. Wow. You know, the show, and Netflix felt compelled to tweet, hey, everyone, there are plenty of other guys on our service who are hot, who are not convicted serial murderers. And so it's sort of like, okay, Netflix, like you kind of want to have it both ways. You know, you're distributing this show that's exalting the guy. People are falling for it. And now you're saying, no, no.
What would have been a better way to tell the Ted Bundy story?
I mean, I think that I'm personally interested in the perspective of his victims. And in fact, you know, there's a woman who was close to him and somehow evaded his violence. And what about an entire documentary about her? Or, you know, another version of him is a very famous true crime book by Anne Rule called The Stranger Beside Me. And that was about, and she went on to be a very celebrated crime writer, but in her early career, she was working at a volunteer suicide hotline alongside Ted Bundy, and she became friends with him and had no idea that he ended up being a serial murderer. And so why that book stands out is because we get her perspective, and, you know, it's not about exalting this guy again and again.
How do shows like this exploit people's empathy?
Well, what I think they do is they miss the opportunity for us to feel empathy for victims, because when we're trafficking in cliches and we're just showing women as kind of figures at the morgue, or, you know, looking sexy in bikinis, or, you know, drawn in cartoon illustrations, we're not given the opportunity to really see them as people. And that, I think, is the biggest tragedy of all.
Carolyn, you have a deeply personal connection to this topic. Your childhood best friend was murdered in 2001 by an alleged serial killer. Looking back at the media coverage of her death, what is most striking to you?
Well, you know, I've been immersed in this space now for the past decade since I've been writing this book. And I would say that a lot of what I'm talking about, my friend Ashley and her story have also sort of fallen prey to, which is that most of the reporting about her case is focused on the man and the killer. And on top of that, she was also going out in LA and was dating celebrities at the time of her death. And many of the stories focus on the male celebrities that she was dating. And it was sort of like her life gets completely lost in the mix, which was why, to me, you know, why I wanted to write the book in the first place was because I wanted to honor the friendship that we had. And I think for a lot of women, childhood friendship and your sort of first best friend shapes you for life. And so that's really what the focus of my book is. And then I also followed the story of, you know, the criminal proceedings for her alleged killer.
Carolyn Murnick is a senior editor at New York Magazine. Carolyn, you've written, you mentioned this memoir and your childhood best friend, her murder. So this is the true crime genre. You're in the middle of it, as you say. You wrote the book and then you completely rewrote it. Tell us about that experience.
Oh, well, you know, when I first learned that my friend was killed, I was in my early 20s, and this was 2001, and I was sort of just starting my career in publishing. And I thought, maybe one day, you know, this could be a thing that I could write about, because it had been a cold case for many years. And I thought, I want to pay attention to this and really learn what happened to her. And then in 2008, I learned that an alleged killer had been arrested, and he's connected to four other victims. And so I thought, wow, like, now the story actually begins, and I'm going to dive in, and I'm going to go to court appearances, and I'm going to structure the book around that. And as I started writing and started sort of thinking about the bones of this story, it hit me that, you know, I was really falling into the same traps that I had been absorbing from watching years of Law and Order, which was focusing on the killer and focusing on this kind of formulaic way of telling the story of loss.
And so then you kind of shifted your thinking. And what was the story that you actually ended up telling?
Well, the story that I actually told, it's still ongoing, because actually the trial for Ashley's killer is amazingly going to be starting in a few weeks in LA, after this defendant has been in jail for 11 years, which is pretty remarkable. And it's 18 years since her death. The trial's finally happening. But the book, as it, you know, the narrative structure right now was about our childhood and about how everyone sort of has a friend who got away in their life, and that girls, I think in particular, are shaping their identities in reference to one another as kids. And Ashley, for me, was that person. And the title, The Hot One, plays off of, you know, the labels that are projected onto girls and women, and implicitly puts them in competition with each other. Why is there one hot one, or one smart one, or one sporty one? And how do those roles influence your sense of self as you grow into adulthood?
Well, we mentioned, we've talked about some Netflix series, or certainly others. Can you think of some examples of network television programming that would fit your view of what an ethical true crime show would be like?
Well, I can say that having, you know, spent many, many years now attending court appearances for Ashley's alleged killer and meeting the crime journalists that have been covering that case and working on shows year after year, I've come to respect the people at 48 Hours, and they've been following this case for over a decade. And while I would say, you know, they only have an hour network format and things do sort of tend to follow a somewhat, you know, expected arc, I think that they are serious journalists that care about, you know, not tarnishing victims, and they care about trying to get as much information out there and giving friends of victims and family members an opportunity to speak.
We have about a minute or so left. Carolyn, do you think that we may be seeing a slowdown in true crime content, or is this going to be a genre that just keeps on going?
You know, I don't think there's going to be a slowdown. And, you know, I would like to think, I'm not sure, that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. What I'm hoping is that this cultural moment that we're in, which is bringing more stories of women's lives from marginalized communities to the surface, I'm hoping that that will start to influence the kind of crime coverage that we're seeing both in the news and in, you know, the entertainment realm.
Given what you've learned in this book, is there another book in your future?
Well, you know, that remains to be seen. To me, the story is still ongoing, because I'll be going out to the trial in L.A. In a couple of weeks and doing some writing about that. So we'll see.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Carolyn. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Carolyn Murnick is a senior editor at New York Magazine. She's also the author of The Hot One, a memoir of friendship, sex, and murder, which is about her best friend's killing. Just ahead, we discover the barrier-breaking players and infamous antics from the earliest days of America's favorite pastime, baseball. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.